either side of the door to guarantee that no one's going to swing that door open. Or a hook-and-eye door latch also works just fine to keep the door slightly ajar. There should be only enough space that if some kind of swatting or swiping breaks out, it can happen with no damage done. Option 2. In my experience, the better option is to introduce the cats by either using a pet gate or a screen door. A pet gate works better than a baby gate, because pet gates are high and have a walk-through door in them, so that the human doesn't have to disassemble the base camp door every time he wants to cross that threshold. Raising the curtain. Once you've decided on whether to use a pet gate or a screen door, drape a blanket over that gate or use clothespins to hang it from the screen. This gives you a much greater sense of control over the degree of visual access because you can raise the curtain gradually over a period of time. The curtain allows you to start with the absolute bare minimum of visual access. For many cats, this added layer of security makes all the difference in giving them the confidence they need to take that next paw over their challenge line. The screening process. As you've seen on my show, I prefer to install a screen door at the base camp door. That sounds like a very big undertaking, but in reality, it's not. The cost of a screen door with sturdy pet screening and the elbow grease to install it by taking your door off the hinges and putting this door in are fairly minimal, and you can even do it in a rental apartment. I highly recommend going with a screen door because it allows for control of access in a way that nothing else can. There are no gates to jump over, no door stops to budge out of the way, and no worry about how high the crack might be under the door. Cat Daddy Tips. Whichever method you use to introduce visual access, the following tips will help. With some cats, you might have to start with no visual access, and then move them into each other's sight line slowly. The blanket technique works well for this. This then becomes the first challenge line to cross, moving from, "I know you're there, but I can't see you," to actually eating while in the sight line of the other. Oftentimes a glitch occurs when one cat eats like a vacuum cleaner while the other picks, pecks, and walks away. You can use a slow-down bowl or other food puzzle to buy you more time on the vacuum cleaner's side while making sure not to provide too many treats between meals and choosing jackpot food for dinner for the finicky diner. When you just crack that base camp door, even if you maximize the angle so the cats are almost looking at each other, it still has a hunting game vibe to it, because each cat gets only glimpses of the other cat. With the screen door, there's no question about message. All body language is obvious. I've seen this process take weeks, but I've also seen this process take just a few days. Your cats will tell you when they're comfortable. Knowing what your cat's body looks like on the side of comfort and on the side of challenge really tells you everything you need to know moving forward. Once you get to the point where you've raised the curtain completely, allowing total visual access while the cats are eating fairly closely to each other, remember, it's not reasonable to expect two stranger cats to comfortably eat within 6 inches of each other, even if there's a door separating them. But you get as close as you can. Then, you're ready for the next step. Step 7. Eat, play, love. I'm a huge hockey fan. The game has changed tremendously since I was a kid back in the 70s. To put it mildly, hockey was a super dangerous sport back then, and not just because you were playing at very high speeds on a sheet of ice with 1/8-inch wide metal blades, holding a wooden stick and dodging a solid rubber projectile traveling sometimes in excess of 100 miles per hour. No, back then, the real danger was that the players would not hesitate to beat the crap out of each other once they were engaged in the game. Sure, fighting is still a fairly common part of the game today, but back then, in a way, it was the game. With inevitable violence looming once the whistle sounded, I always thought the most fascinating thing was the pregame ritual, when both teams would skate out onto the ice for their warm-up period. Each team would occupy an opposite side of the rink, with a red line dividing the ice right down the middle. The players would skate in circles, warming up their legs and taking shots at their goalie, and they would occasionally glance over at their opponents at the other side of the rink, who were also skating in circles and warming up. Sworn enemies engaged in the same activity, separated by a painted line. What kept these continual circles moving while this unspoken frenetic energy boiling beneath the surface dictated that, at any moment, a stare down would lead to a full-scale throwdown? The fragile peace was kept by virtue of the ritual itself. The players knew that this is the way it always happens, and it never has or will result in a brawl. This is the vision I had in mind when designing the next step of introduction, which I call Eat, Play, Love, EPL. Philosophically, this is an extension of the other side of the door exercise. Before, you were just creating a positive association based on food. Now you are going for the whole enchilada. These three things, eat, play, and love, represent the highest of high-value experiences we humans bring to our cats in the course of a day. When this exercise is in play, no pun intended, all of these experiences are withheld until they can be broken out as one big feel-good extravaganza. To the best of our abilities, of course. You can't just go on a snuggle strike. That would be ridiculous. I'm serious. This ritual has the potential to be Christmas morning every day, and the one caveat is that it happens with a strange cat in the room. The gist of EPL is pretty simple. You're bringing one cat into a room where there's another cat at the other end of the rink, so to speak, who is already engaged in a high-value, fully engrossing activity. And your challenge is to keep them skating in their own circle for as long as possible through treats, positive reinforcement, play, and, well, love, without that stare-down throw-down happening. Fire Drill. The earliest I remember the fire drill was 1973. I was 6 years old, which would have made my brother two or three. We lived in an apartment in New York City, something that made my dad ultra-paranoid when it came to emergencies, since you were, to a degree, held hostage by the building itself. So, with getting out of the building being the thing that would keep us alive, he made sure we knew the exact steps that would get us out, and also the exact and graphic consequences if we didn't follow those steps. Believe me, he had us motivated. Of course, he had to take it a step further. That's where the fire drill came in. In the middle of the night, Dad would suddenly come running into our bedroom, turn on the lights, and while banging on a pan with a wooden spoon, yell, "Fire! Fire! Fire!" My brother and I, after first soiling our PJs, would go into full-on fire drill mode. The first couple of times, you're half-hysterical and fully dazed, struggling to recall the protocol. But after three or four times, the banging, the lights flicking on and off, and his booming voice became an association. Get on the floor! Both of us lying flat, my brother would get on my back. I would turn into a turtle and crawl to our bedroom door and put my hand on the doorknob to see if it was hot. If not, we kept turtle crawling, staying low. We did that with every closed door in the apartment until we got to the front door and felt it. If it wasn't hot, we would head outside, being sure to use only the stairs, never the elevator. We would then head out into the lobby of the building, steps from emerging onto freaking Broadway at 3 a.m, and there's your fire drill. That was nearly 45 years ago at the time of this writing, and I remember that fire drill in my bones. It's muscle memory. To this day, if someone came running into my bedroom banging a wooden spoon on a pot in the middle of the night yelling fire, I would get out of that house in a very safe way. Then I might come to my senses and have the crazy person who got into my house arrested, but that's not the point. The point is that staying prepared so that anxiety is put on the back burner while a job gets done, that's the fire drill. This is a great concept to apply to many cat parenting functions, like giving your cat a pill or helping him into a carrier, which we'll get into in Chapter 12. For now, though, how does this concept apply to our present circumstances? Fire drill, in terms of your cats in a multi-cat household, is having walked through every eventuality in such a complete way that you will metaphorically get your ass onto Broadway. The bridge that is crossed when moving from introduction, or reintroduction, techniques, to one where we balance technique with a degree of trust is a crucial part of the journey. That said, the bridge doesn't have to feel like it's going to give way at any moment. The following checklist helps keep the cat safe during the process, but, just as important, keeps you feeling in control, which is just as important as the steps themselves. Our cats are so energetically sensitive and are already feeling the raised temperature in the room. Your sense of unease, the pervading what-if thinking from moment to moment, can very well be the spark that sets the bridge on fire. Therefore, it's important for you to break down and anticipate the possibility of conflict. That way, when you're finally at that point, with the cats in the same room together, barrier-free, you will know what to do if conflict begins to unfold and the fire alarm sounds. The Eat, Play, Love Checklist. 1. The unders and the outs. When we lose control of exercises like EPL, many times we lose it to the environment itself. One thing I can tell you from experience, fights start with chasing. Chasing very often ends in a room, in a closet, or under a bed or a piece of furniture you never in your wildest nightmares thought was big enough for one cat, let alone two. You can control the chaos by controlling the space. And that means blocking off the unders and sealing off the outs. If your EPL session takes place in the living room, then it's up to you to seal off the outs, meaning doors are closed, gates are up, and you are now working in a playing field that you alone have defined. Further define that space and block off the unders. The only way you're going to make sure you're not going to put your hand into a trash disposal of fangs and claws is to make sure there's not going to be a fight under a bed or couch. 2. Have your sight blockers ready. A sight blocker is something that A, the cats can't see through, B, is solid enough that you can place it between them and they can't bust through it, and C, is high enough that you don't have to bend down to place it between the two cats and your hands are out of the danger zone should a fight break out. Flattened and taped up cardboard boxes of the appropriate height have always worked best for me, or you could try a thick piece of foam core. Don't use a blanket or something flimsy, they'll just run through it. When you see that first sign of doom, usually it's the moment at which movement stops and the stare down starts. It's game over. Sight blocker down. If you can't control them with toys and treats, lead them away. Use the sight blocker to guide someone out of the room. Again, your goal is to end everything on a high note, or at least not a low note. 3. Last resort removal option. In the event of a serious lockdown, when you can't get the cats to budge even with the sight blockers down, or if, despite your best efforts, a fight breaks out, a blanket can be a good friend. Just toss it over one of them, scoop them up, and remove them from the room. Another tool to have on hand is an empty soda can with pennies in it and tape across the opening. As opposed to using your voice, which will just add bad associations on top of an already bad situation, shaking that can will help shock the cats out of the moment they are locked into. The thing that unites these tools? They help to keep your panicked initial response from happening, which is just to scream and stick your hands into the cat blender. That will never end well for you. 4. Be fire drill ready. Sight blockers, penny cans, and blankets should be placed so that no matter where you are in the room, you can quickly access them while you are also allowing the organic process of the two cats commingling to happen. In other words, the last thing you want is to hover. You've got to have the confidence to step back, be cool, and remove panic from a stressful situation. That's why we think of all eventualities and proactively incorporate our tools. Ask yourself, if they begin to fight, where will it be most likely to break out and where will it end? Mark those areas with sight blockers, cans, and blankets. At the same time, you need to be able to spring into action should the proceedings go south. The key is, though, that springing into action contains steps that you've thought through enough times, which means your response will be measured, appropriate to the situation itself, and not driven by emotions. Another note, it definitely takes two to tango when it comes to the fire drill process for cat introductions. Your partner in the fire drill is not only on the same page, but the same paragraph, the same sentence. Your end game here is to create an even fuller immersion into the positive association experience we've been working on throughout this entire section. In this case, there is no barrier between the two cats, hence the pre-hockey game metaphor, and you will ultimately shoot for both cats eating a meal in the same room. Success here is the final frontier before full integration. Here is a step-by-step process for pulling this off. A. Know your players. Get to know who you're dealing with. What type of players are your resident and newcomer? Model T? Sports car? See Chapter 7 for more info on types of cat players. Do they tend to be more food-motivated or love-slash-attention-motivated? What is the highest order of pleasure on their cat jackpot meter? What would go beyond really liking something and guarantee engrossment? Would it involve a favorite food-slash-jackpot treat, a special toy, or something like brushing or petting? Keep in mind that these treats-slash-activities need to be something that keeps his motor humming and motivation high, even when another cat is in his space. B. Prime the jackpot pump. You may be absolutely sure of what your cat's favorite treat or toy is, but it will only become jackpot after a period of absence. This is to say that, before getting into the EPL festivities, you must withhold her favorite things. I know it's going to be hard not to dispense treats or favorite tastes whenever she gives you those big, baleful eyes or that mournful, "Why do you hate me, meow?" But don't give in. Delayed gratification will turn all of these things into a jackpot party. C. Ritualize an optimal play session with each cat. Once you know your player's preferences, it's important to have a successful session with one cat in the absence of the other cat, so you know what it looks like when each cat is engaged versus when each is distracted. This will help you evaluate and monitor the Eat, Play, Love session when they are both in the same room, and, just as important, it will help end the session on a high note. Just like with food, we need a jackpot when it comes to the type of toy that starts your cat's engine. Once you find one, find others. Rotating toys plays into the raw cat rhythm because it mimics variety in types of prey and, of course, keeps the game fresh day after day. Ritualizing is essential because you will know both what they like for play and also when they are about to be turned off. Instead of giving them the opportunity to dash for the other cat, you are ending the session while they are still distracted by the play. You'll stay one step ahead of the game. D. The Eat, Play, Love session. Ready to go? To prepare, choose the common area room in which to have the joint session. This should be the largest room with the most amount of empty space. A crowded, smaller room gives the cats too many things to focus on and too many opportunities to get away from you and to get at each other. Next, enlist the help of a friend, significant other, or family member, etc. As I said, I'm always a proponent of having human partners to aid in these introduction steps, but this exercise specifically is one you just can't do solo. Important. Remember the hockey analogy. We want both cats moving in those big opposing circles. Momentum is on equal par with engagement during this exercise, and likewise, stasis is our greatest enemy. 1. Start with one cat. Begin by playing with only one cat in the room at first. Make sure he is engaged and keep him moving. If you are dispensing treats, get that breadcrumb trail going. As he is chewing one, you put the next one down where he can see it, so that he is moving toward his next goal as he's finishing the previous one. The same goes for toys. You need to be in control of your cat's head. The rest will follow. In times of potential stare-downs, nothing is more your friend than your ability to move your cat's eyes where you want them to look. 2. Bring in the other cat. Casually have your partner bring the other cat into the room with her already engaged. In a perfect world, you would lead the cat into the space with whatever is her jackpot, whether that is food, a toy, etc. This way, you are not creating that extra static energy on your cat's part by being carried into the space. You should aim for giving her that extra dose of mojo that comes from thinking that she is making all of her own decisions. 3. Keep the rhythm going. The most important component when you bring the cats together is establishing and maintaining a rhythm of play once they hit the room. This is where your partner's help is invaluable, because he or she can work to focus the other cat on the session while you do the same with yours. 4. End the session. The session will end in one of two ways. Either the cats will end it, or the humans will. It goes without saying that you would prefer the latter every time. Knowing your cat's physical language tells you when boredom is setting in, which leads to being easily distracted. That said, you can't possibly retain all control all the time. Here are some extra tips to prevent a throwdown. The moment one cat stops moving, stares at the other cat, and will not be redirected, you might as well call it a day. A perfect world end to a session would be to lead them out of the room with a toy. As I said, I always prefer, for the sake of cat mojo, for cats to feel like they are making the decisions. If that decision, however, is looking like it's going to be a messy one, and if you need to pick up one of the cats and bring him into another room before the cats take action on that decision, then that's what you do. Always choose to end the exercise on a high note. Remember, you are trying to create positive associations, which is a check we can cash only with consistent positive endings. Listen to your gut. Are you adding one final challenge to the day's proceedings or one too many brushstrokes? Cap off the EPL sequence, no matter if it ends good, bad, or ugly, with dinner. Chances are that your cats will probably be on the full side if the day went well, so you may need to hold off on mealtime for a bit. But keep the consistency going. At this point, the cats expect to eat dinner on either side of the door slash gate, and it's one last chance to end the day on a positively reinforced note. 5. Final goal for Eat, Play, Love. Once you are secure in Eat, Play, Love, when you can accomplish EPL without having to end it prematurely, and it's a ritual that has become part of the everyday cycle, then you can break down the door slash gate barrier for mealtime and end the session by feeding the cats on the side of the room that they occupy. Just remember that imaginary red line in the center of the room. Start with a more respectful distance on either side of the red line, just as you did initially with the door feeding ritual. In the end, eating tends to be the easiest path to détente that I know of. Cat Daddy Eat Play Love Tips. Switch it up. Use the principles of sight swapping when doing Eat Play Love. If you do it the same way every single day, with one cat entering the perceived territory of another cat, then you're inadvertently setting up a dynamic of over-ownership or lack thereof. Switch off. One day, bring the newcomer into the room where the resident is playing. Then the next day, bring the resident into the room where the newcomer is playing. Subdue the stare down. As you go forward with this exercise and do it multiple times, you'll know how to best redirect your cats if they start to stare. Distraction left unchecked can lead to the dreaded stare down. Knowing when distraction is about to happen means that you have an opportunity to retain control, redirect their attention, or choose to just call it a day. Essentially, really knowing their body language keeps you a step ahead of the game. And the cats. Remember, it's on you to conduct these exercises without a fight breaking out. Baby steps to success. At the beginning of this process, look for success in very small increments. If the going has already been a little tough during the introduction, having the two cats in the same territory and occupied for just 1 minute is a win. Although it might seem silly at first, write down the exact amount of time that this brief session lasted. Tomorrow, when you up it by 5, 10, or even 15 seconds, you've won that day too. Sometimes the biggest successes come in the form of just a few seconds. Don't sweat the setbacks, just step back. There's always a possibility that, despite our best laid plans, a fight breaks out. That shouldn't be the end of your work. That should just be the end of the day. But it doesn't mean that you're doing everything wrong. Sometimes you're just working against what these cats have conditioned themselves to act like around each other. Sometimes the cats are just having a bad day, or something stressful occurs in the home to throw off their predictable rhythms. Again, it's important to remember that in the course of any relationship, there are fights. We just use words, they use claws. For your well-being, remember that an argument doesn't define a relationship. It's what happens afterwards that does. So what do you do if this happens? Back it up a step. For instance, if your first attempt at Eat, Play, Love ended before it ever began, with chaos erupting as soon as the exercise commenced, take it back to the last spot of repeated and predictable success. In this case, let's say that the last time you fed 3 meals in a row without even a sideways glance from either participant was opposite sides of the door, full visual access, 3 feet of separation. Then that's where you go back to. If that's asking too much, meaning either or both cats avoid eating, engage in too much growling, etc., retrace the process back one step from there. You will find very quickly an acceptable challenge line where you can restart the process. 15 seconds of peace. Even in the hardest cases, if you have 15 seconds of peace and you keep building, you will have success. Just like I spoke about regarding the challenge line, introducing cats is like the beginning stages of a roller coaster. Have faith. There will come that moment when all of a sudden, boom, the tracks take over. It just breaks free and you have a group rhythm in the house and all is well. Commonly asked questions. What if you have more than two cats? If you have more than two cats, I recommend that you build relationships one pair at a time. Start with the easier cats if possible, so they can create a social bridge for the other relationships. Do all of the exercises with different combinations of cats, being sure not to overwhelm the newcomer with too many cats at once. Do cats need their own litter boxes? Is it a sign of impending territorial strife when one cat is using the other cat's box to pee or poop? There is no such thing as one cat's box. You want to have N plus one litter boxes, But each litter box is a communal signpost and should have every cat's scent in it. In the cat's social world, there is no sense of the proprietary. One cat does not or should not put his name on any object to the exclusion of any other cat. Every cat is going to use those signposts at some point, if they so desire. I've had many clients over the year who, for one reason or another, clung to the notion that each cat should have his own litter box, and that the cats perceive it to be a great social transgression for one cat to use another's box. Not only is this a case of human projection, but keeping this perceived social order intact will, more often than not, backfire. There's no way to tell a cat, "Don't use this box, but use that box." Anytime you try to stop a cat from going into any litter box, you are simply sending mixed messages that will often end with the cats rejecting every litter box. Very simply, let the cats decide which boxes they want to use. What if we have two cats who simply will not get along despite our best efforts in implementing all of this introduction advice? This is tricky. How long do you continue to try and make it work when the cats are letting you know they don't want it to? Knowing when it's just not a good fit is a very personal decision, so it's tough for me to weigh in on it in such a general way. One thing I can say is that throughout this process, your expectations have to be realistic. Ultimately, you can't make cats get along. There's always the chance for human misinterpretation of the relationship. I've seen this countless times. The cats are getting along, but the relationship just doesn't look the way you want it to look. Maybe you want your cats to groom each other on the bed or act like litter mates. But in many cases, cats getting along means they simply tolerate one another. As far as I'm concerned, as long as there is a ceasefire and as long as they have a truce in which they declare, "We can share space," all is good. That means the groundwork is set for dialogue and for the building of a lifelong relationship that will, like all relationships, grow. That said, check out Chapter 14 for a number of super deluxe remedies to common cat aggression problems. Mojo maintenance. Now that the introduction period is in the rear view, here are a couple of helpful hints to keep things harmonious between your cats in the years ahead. Stay resource rich. One of the common denominators I see in the long-term success of feline relations is that there remains an abundance of resources available for all resident cats. Do you have enough resources to go around? How is the sundial situation? Is there plenty of vertical space for everyone? Are you maintaining separate food dishes and plus one litter boxes? Keep everyone tired and happy. Cats who play together stay together, in relative harmony. However, we can't always presume that playing together will mean that your cats will be playing with each other like a couple of kittens every day. That's where your commitment to HCKE factors in. By keeping up with your play equals prey strategies, as discussed in Chapter 7, we help to burn away that excess energy buildup that can lead to problems between cats. Expecting to expand the family with a new dog or child? In the same way that there are optimal procedures to introduce cats to cats, there are optimal procedures to introduce cats to dogs as well as kids. Stay tuned. Cats and dogs. If you are anything like me, you got most of your childhood animal education from Saturday morning cartoons. I'll admit it. By the time I turned 7 or 8 years old, I just knew that cats and dogs were born to hate one another. I was also positive that dogs hated smart aleck rabbits, cats hated Tweety birds, and coyotes hated roadrunners. Well, coyotes pretty much hated everyone, but that's because of their superiority complex. Anyhow, I digress. The point is, regardless of where we were taught that the old saying, fighting like cats and dogs, was the norm, any of us who proudly identified as bipetual will tell you that real life is not a cliche. Cats and dogs can get along just fine. There's not always a cat waiting around the corner to hit a dog with a frying pan, or a dog looking to chase after a cat until he runs out of chain and chokes himself. Life is not like cartoons, at least not most of the time. Although it is true that coyotes can be pretty smug. If you bring a new dog into your home, and your cat has never even seen a dog before, you're asking a lot of your cat to withstand the stress of coming into contact with a new being. All new beings are potential predators in the mind of the raw cat, so it's part of its wiring to be cautious. In this section, we will be concentrating on getting past that suspicion in much the same way I've described meeting other cats,
through positive associations. However, no matter what we do to tell your cat that the new being is friend, not foe, there's work to be done on both sides of the leash. We still have to be able to cash that dog-shaped check. Doggy due diligence. Here are a few things to consider if you're thinking about adopting a new dog into a cat's home. Do your research. It should go without saying that it's important to do your research if you're adopting a dog into a home with a cat. Socialization with other animals at a young age is good for cats and dogs, so you might look for a dog who has lived successfully with a cat in the past. Certainly, you'd want to avoid adopting a dog who has had bad experiences with cats. Also, most shelters do their dog due diligence when evaluating dogs for adoption. The aforementioned prey drive is a big factor. Similarly, if the shelter received information about a tendency towards resource guarding in the dog's previous home, that, too, is a red flag. A fearful dog might actually present a problem since panic might lead to redirected aggression. Individuals, not breeds. In the animal adoption world, there has always been persistent discussion / argument about avoiding certain dog breeds when it comes to matching them in a home with a cat. While it's true that certain breeds might be more prone to having a heightened prey drive, for instance, I believe it does a disservice to the potential match to judge a book by its cover or a dog by her breed. As always, it comes down to the individual dog. Personality match. You want to match compatible personality types, just as you would when picking a new cat. Age, breed, and energy level should be at least part of your adoption criteria. And many, if not most shelters, have even tested how dogs respond to cats at the shelter. At the end of the day, however, the most important information you need will be available once you have the dog in your home environment. That is going to tell you how things are going to go and what you might need to work on as far as the dog side of the relationship is concerned. Training. In a perfect world, whether the dog in the equation is the existing resident or the newcomer, he or she would be well trained and predictably under voice command. When it comes to implementing the exercises I'm about to take you through, that training is a security blanket like no other that we can wrap around the proceedings. Of course, we don't live in a perfect world. Although it's becoming more and more the norm to have training classes for dogs while they are still in the shelter, they are still a four-legged question mark when they cross the threshold of your home for the first time. Likewise, a dog that has lived with you for years still probably gets away with more than a little, but that little becomes a lot when a cat comes into his life. Being undertrained, however, is not a crime. It just illuminates a need. By no means am I telling you not to adopt a dog that you're falling in love with just because of this need. It just means you need to get down to work. A little help from my friends. Introducing a cat to your dog is a surefire way to uncover some gaps in your dog's training work. This is no time to go it alone. If your dog cannot accomplish a downstay or similar calm behaviors as a cat walks across his path, then 1, you're introducing them too soon, and 2, it's time to call in the cavalry and find a good dog trainer with a solid background in positive reinforcement-based methods. The good news is that most likely there's a qualified trainer in your area who can help. And with all of the stress you're dealing with in bringing a new family member home and creating new relationships, you should ask for that help. If possible, I would recommend bringing in a qualified dog trainer for a few in-home sessions. Having the trainer come to your home provides a vantage point to the dog's behavior that the trainer just can't otherwise get. And that means you will then have tools that are customized for your dog in this new, very specific situation. Whether you opt for private or class-style training, hiring a dog trainer also prevents a lot of frustration on your part as you make your way through the first few weeks of introduction. With training, solid catification, management, supervision, and a little help from your friends, there's no reason most cats and dogs can't live in harmony. Like peanut butter and jelly, the step-by-step cat-to-dog introduction process. A cat-to-dog introduction can happen one of two ways. You either bring a dog home to where a cat lives, or you bring a cat home to where a dog lives. Each introduction scenario will unfold in a way similar to our cat-to-cat process. You'll even utilize the same 7 steps. When reviewing the cat-to-cat section, just remember that when introducing 2 cats, you are following the letter of the law. When you're introducing cats and dogs, it's more about the spirit of the thing and not necessarily about following every step religiously. Any subtle distinctions in approach will be noted with each step. Let's begin with a few more dog-influenced particulars in the first step. Step 1. Proactive preparation, cat-to-dog style. A. Scheduled meals only. If you currently leave out food 24/7 for your resident dog or cat, remember, scheduled meals are your friends. And it's important to note that we're not just trying to convince the cat that the dog is a good thing, but we're also making sure that the dog has a positive association with your cat. No more free feeding. The catification aspects of cat-to-dog cohabitation are very specific and, for various reasons, a little different than cat-to-cat. B. Catify the living areas. Remember, the essence of Cat Mojo is confident ownership of territory. So before you bring home a new dog, make sure that your space is fully catified for life with a dog. The most important consideration is proper use of the vertical world. Your cat, if threatened, needs a home above the floor. This space should be above the reach of a dog. There's no better occasion to introduce the concept of the cat superhighway than now. The cat superhighway is another way of saying that we want to catify so that a cat can circumvent the major living spaces, such as the living room, without touching the floor if they so choose. Review Chapter 8 for more on this concept. Our cat-to-dog mantra. The sky is owned by cats in the world of cats and dogs. That means that cats may be either sharing or relinquishing control of the floor to a certain degree. But that's a decent trade-off. Don't forget, in a cat's eye view, their world is floor to ceiling. The volume they perceive in terms of vertical territory, if it is accessible to them, is the whole Megillah. Dogs, on the other hand, are terrestrial for the most part, and this is where cats get an advantage in terms of overall space utilization. The best way for a cat to meet any new family member, whether human, cat, or dog, is to be able to get some distance between them in order to get comfortable and make sense of a completely foreign body, so to speak. This is especially true where dogs are concerned. How does a dog move? What are those sounds they make? Where's that smell coming from? Why are they interested in X, Y, and Z? Cats want to be able to survey what's going on around them, and catifying the space allows them to do that safely. Cat trees are not only a great way for cats to get that vantage point, but cat trees can also act as on-ramps and off-ramps to and from the cat superhighway. Cat trees are a great way to prevent dead ends. That is to say, if things go south and the dog chases the cat and the cat runs out of floor, she has the vertical world to rely on. And again, there's nothing like having a cat tree that looks out a window. While your cat is watching the new creature in the house, she can also take a break and watch some cat TV. C. Catify the litter box areas. This is a big deal, because most dogs are attracted to litter boxes as if they were a buffet. Cat waste is protein-heavy and a great snack as far as dogs are concerned. As disgusting as that may sound to a human, it's even worse for the cat. And here's the big reason. The litter box has to be a safe place. Make that a sacred place for a cat. If a cat is in a litter box and this huge snout comes along waiting not so patiently for what is coming out of the cat, that litter box has lost its sanctity. And what that means is that your cat is going to start looking for a safer place to pee and poop. So, what can you do? 1. Make sure that any litter box is uncovered, so that your cat has escape routes. They get in, they have a 360-degree view, and they can get out. 2. Avoid dead ends. Those who really hate my first suggestion might compensate for taking the lid off the box by putting the box in a place where nobody can see it. This might very well create a new problem. Let's say that you put the box in the corner of the bathroom behind the toilet. From a catification perspective, you've created a dead end, which is an ambush zone. If the dog follows your cat into the bathroom, blocking off exit routes for the cat, then the cat will just stop going to that box in favor of an area where she has a safe 360-degree view of the terrain. The takeaway here, as always, is that you're best served putting your aesthetic desires behind the built-in needs of our raw cat, who is not going to go anywhere unless he is assured multiple escape routes. 3. Keep litter boxes in rooms that dogs can't access. Ordinarily, I'm all about litter boxes being available in socially significant spaces, but in the world of dog and cat, you might have to make some concessions. One of my go-to moves is putting up a baby gate in a room where their litter box is. Then you can raise up that baby gate around 8 inches off the ground, maybe a little less if you have a small dog. That way, the cat has the ability to go either under the gate or over the gate, and we can rest assured that the litter box is safe from prying snouts, or toddlers, who think that any sandbox is an invitation. We can't blame the dog for seeking out a protein-rich snack any more than we can blame the toddler for creating a poop-festooned sandcastle. What we can do is try to head off that problem at the pass, because nobody wants to get dog kisses from one who just left a litter box. Take my word for it. Step 2. Base camp and first time through the threshold. It's always crucial to know what your first moves will be when you enter your home with your new family member, be it dog or cat. Having a concrete game plan gives you a measure of immediate control, not to mention peace of mind. This step has two main components. A. Base camp. Although setting up base camp is less critical when bringing a dog into a cat's territory, since the cat has already established herself there, this process is still important. Base camp becomes the safe zone, a panic room of sorts, for the cat to retreat to whenever she's feeling a bit uneasy about her new roommate. It's also a front row seat to the territory where she can be surrounded by familiar scents and owned objects that provide reassurance. Obviously, you will want to set up base camp in an area that's naturally off limits or inaccessible to the dog. That said, since we are not relegating the cat to base camp, she should be able to explore the world that the new dog is occupying at her own pace, not ours, especially by this part of the process. Again, as long as the dog is on leash, the cat should feel free to explore, since making her feel like a guest in her own territory would be a punch in the gut of cat mojo. When you bring a cat to a dog's home, it will be business as usual, just like we described in the cat-to-cat section. The cat will start off exclusively in base camp. B1. First time through the threshold. Dog into a cat's home. It's all about the leash. When you first bring a dog into a home with cats, repeat after me. The leash stays on. The fact is, you don't really know your new family member very well, and despite all of your due diligence before the adoption, and likely on the part of the shelter or rescue organization, you just have no idea what triggers may be pulled the first time your dog sees a cat, or the first time a cat sniffs the dog's toys, food, or even water. So once your cat and dog are in the same physical space, I would still keep your dog on leash for a little while until you feel safe and while that trust bridge is still under construction. The leash gives you a reliable and consistent degree of control over your new family member. At least in my home, it's not until the dog earns our complete trust that he goes leash-free. We don't even necessarily have to be holding on to it, especially as the days go by and the introduction process is well underway. If the leash is still on and the dog makes a sudden move, we can quickly pin the leash to the ground with a foot, that leash, and regain control. Getting your dog under complete voice command is a process. The right to wander the house freely is definitely one that is earned. B2. The first time through the threshold. Cat into a dog's home. Go directly to base camp. When you first bring a cat into any new home for the first time, it doesn't matter if you are bringing that cat into a home with a dog or no dog, other cats or no other cats, or 6 other cats, 4 dogs, a box turtle and a partridge in a pear tree. Base camp should be set up and your new cat should be delivered directly there. No matter how tempted you are to do otherwise, don't just let the cat out of her carrier in the middle of the living room floor. The universal truths of catification and building mojo by gradually building a territory that cats can feel complete autonomy over are just that. Universal. The nitty-gritty. Once you make it to this point in the process, review steps 3 through 7 in the cat-to-cat section. See Chapter 8. Although the techniques and intent remain the same, there is a major difference. We proceed at a very measured pace when it comes to cats meeting cats, because it is all about convincing two animals who depend on the sanctity of their territory that the new being in the space presents no threat, and can actually be a positive thing. In the case of cat meets dog, the two species have very different needs, and the name of the game really is getting the dog to be less frantically curious, or less fearful, and the cat more trusting, or less fearful. Among other things, this means that the steps are a bit more fluid, and can be performed at whatever pace you observe is necessary for your individual situation. The following are some notes for each step that are cat-to-dog specific. Onward! Step 3. The other side of the door feeding ritual. As described in the cat-to-cat section, you will still follow our ritual of feeding dog and cat on opposite sides of a closed door and work towards bringing those food dishes closer together over time. Once again, the idea is slow desensitization. If every time food is served, the cat smells the dog, and in fact the only time she smells the dog is when there's food present, chances are she's going to think the dog has good things to offer. Of course, there are a few things to bear in mind that make this step different when considering cat to dog versus cat to cat. When excited, fearful, agitated, etc., dogs bark. Sudden barking will scare the cat pants off of most cats and put a good dent in the positive association business. When in the initial feeling out process of this step, err on the side of caution and move that challenge line back far enough so that we can move past the initial stages of dog excitement. Also, there's by and large a lot less hesitation on the part of dogs to get up close and personal with something or someone they are curious about. Cats, again generally, will be much more deliberate about how they approach. Another good reason to have a leash on your dog, even when doing this initial ritual, a dog rushing the door is also a good way of telling the cat that the door isn't exactly safe. Step 4. Scent swapping. This remains a handy protocol for both parties. One thing that unites cats and dogs is their superior sense of smell. They glean a lot of information from this sense when sussing out new situations. As you would when introducing a new cat, you should let the resident cat have at the dog's bedding and toys and vice versa before any face-to-face introduction happens. Step 5. Sight swapping. When introducing cat to cat, sight swapping assures the participants every step of the way that territorially they are safe and not in danger of losing ownership. With cat to dog sight swapping, on the dog's part, it's more about satisfying curiosity and allowing for full exploration than making sure the coast is clear, so to speak. Hint: a great time to allow the cat a bit of impromptu sight swapping is when you take your dog for a walk. Step 6. Visual access. With this step, you add to the scent stimulation you've already established by setting up a baby gate or screen door during our feeding ritual. Many of the same visual access strategies discussed in our cat-to-cat introduction process will work here. A cracked door, pet gate, or screen door, along with the idea of the gradual reveal via a blanket. Only you will know when the time is right to try this. If you attempt a little visual exposure and the dog tries to sniff too hard or gives excitement/anxiety cues like stiffening or whining, or the cat gets freaked out, and you should know what that looks like by now, simply take it back one step and then try again over the next few sessions. Repetition with predictable outcomes is what convinces everyone that the new other can be trusted. And you'll know when you're making progress when the dog barks and the cat doesn't have every hair standing on end, or if the cat smells or sees the dogs and she doesn't start to hiss with ears flattened because she feels completely threatened. Step 7. Eat, Play, Love, EPL, Cat to Dog Style. I think that EPL is just as valuable when introducing cat to dog as cat to cat, but, as you've seen with these other steps, for different reasons. The main goal of this step when dealing exclusively with cats is successfully sharing territory and having the experience of pure jackpot only in the presence of the other cat, repeated over and over again until that positive association is cemented. Again, it's about planting the seeds of communal cat mojo. In the case of cat meets dog, the end game is a little different because the species are different. Here, the goal remains much the same for the cat, but there is the extra bonus of getting a crash course in Dog 101. By watching a dog play, solicit love, respond to that love, get excited, and eat and pursue food, the cat can learn a foreign language at a physically safe distance. You might be asking, can't this education be done while life is just happening? Meaning, while the family is just hanging out with the dog safely on a leash and the cat is free to explore and learn dog language at her own pace? Yes, the education can and will also happen that way over time. But if your cat is already a wallflower, leaving her to explore this new and potentially scary other at her own pace may just mean that it's not going to happen anytime this year. With EPL, You turn this education and exposure into an enforced ritual, helping the cat to get over that initial challenge line faster than if we left her to her own devices. Because each animal's energy level will naturally be heightened during this ritual, you will also get valuable information that can prevent some pretty negative outcomes down the line. For instance, if the dog is watching your cat play and suddenly his predatory instinct is triggered, that's information that you need and a pretty strong indication that it's time to bring in a dog trainer to prevent what could be a pretty dangerous problem. Also, let's not forget that cats can be dangerous to dogs, too. One of the great things about EPL is that you are dictating the distance, excitement level, and tempo of this part of the introduction slash education. Let's say that the dog, playing with maximum excitement, triggers your cat's fight-or-flight response, or at least heightens her anxiety level to a point where a redirected aggression or overstimulation incident could unfold. The ensuing fight would not be just physically damaging, but damaging to the trust you are trying to instill. The dog now feels unsafe around the cat. Remember, although cats are defensive rather than offensive animals by nature, if cats feel threatened, they are accomplished fighters who know how to stay alive. There's a reason why, in the equation of fight or flight, fight comes first. Dogs are good. As I've said before, the world of building positive associations is not complete until promises that were made are fulfilled, especially when a cat's instinctive fight or flight alarm bells tell her not to do that something you want her to do. Let's imagine the situation as if your cat were your human child who will not sleep without the lights on in his room because he is convinced that there is a monster under his bed. You can reassure him by checking under the bed every night while he watches, telling him with confidence that the coast is clear, and saying good night. The chances of being able to turn the light out still remain iffy. If you can get him to look under the bed with you, praising him mightily as he crosses his challenge line nightly, you've helped build his mojo so that he can participate in the decision to go lights out. That said, whether cat or child, all of that mojo building still depends on one singular outcome. A monster can never appear. Coming back to our cat. The day that alien dog being enters her life, it's like you hand the cat a little note that says, "Dear cat, dog is a good thing. Love, human." My point is that from that moment on and through the course of the introduction techniques, the monster can never appear from under the bed. All our positive associations go straight out the window if the dog chases the cat, cornering her under a bed or on top of the fridge. Of course, it's not an insurmountable setback, but the process is about building trust, and you'd rather not be in the position of rebuilding. Many times when I'm approached by those who identify as cat people, they will express surprise, and sometimes disapproval, that the cat guy posts so many pictures of his dogs on social media. At which point I will bring up my surprise that the cat person versus dog person division still exists. I use the word bipedal as a lighthearted way of declaring my devotion to both, and I hold that sign up proudly every day because I want everyone to experience it. Yes, dogs and cats are yin and yang. They bring very different, but at the same time very complementary, energy to one's home and life. Hopefully, this section has given you not only the tools, but insights into bipedal life that, once implemented, can lead to lifelong friendships, and not a world dominated by cartoon frying pans. 11. Cat-human relationship mojo. Introductions, communications, and your role in the mojo. By this point, one thing I hope I've impressed on you, especially as we dove into Chapter 6 and the Mojo Toolbox, is that your life with your cat, or cats, is not an arrangement of ownership, but a primary relationship. This very basic tenet is also the primary plank in the Cat Mojo platform. Now we're going to dive into what it means to own the relationship at different stages of the human experience, and how the status of that relationship drives your desire to make the best life possible for both of you. Cats and kids. Raising the next generation of cat lovers. In my close to decade-long tenure at an animal shelter, I worked almost every position imaginable, which, many years later, I realized was an incredible blessing. I've had the horrible responsibilities associated with the pet overpopulation crisis. But at the same time, I've been given a periscope that allows me to scour the landscape and help chart a new course toward a more humane future. One of my jobs along the way was director of community outreach. Although I was admittedly in the dark when it came to children, I relished the idea of being able to help instill in them a love for and empathy toward animals while they were at such a crucial developmental phase of their lives. One of the more challenging aspects of life in the trenches of any movement is that, well, that you're in the trench. You can't, for the most part, know that the work you're doing is of any value, but you know it feels good and it feeds your soul. Today, there's nothing that gets me more emotional than to see children who are growing up with animals. Children I meet at fundraisers or work with in my practice. More and more those children get it. They truly love their animal companions, and at the same time, they demand that others around them do the same. That radical empathy from such a young mind often brings me to tears. Really? I know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that child is going to be one more body in a growing army of compassion. That's one of the reasons this section is so important to me. All children should grow up with animals in their lives and learn empathy and compassion. Not to mention that it's amazing and fun and cool. Kids should be part of raising a cat, not just as witnesses, but as guardians. These kids are the next generation of cat lovers, and the reason we won't be killing cats in shelters in the future. If you want to help ensure that your child grows up aware of the world around him, instilled with the desire to be of service, add an animal to his life. The other reason this section hit home for me is this. Far too often, I've noticed that when a couple is expecting a new baby, especially a first baby, their cat ends up in the shelter. The guardians are often saying goodbye before the baby is even born, and sadly, this decision is often born out of tired old myths, the likes of which we'll be addressing in this section. We'll also talk about establishing real-life preparedness for bringing home a baby to your cat, or a cat to your kids. What you can do in terms of catification to ensure a better life for your children and your cat. And, of course, how to set the stage for your child to become a member of Team Cat Mojo 20 years from now. Cats and babies. Myth-busting. If you're expecting a baby and have a cat, you might have gotten hints from friends, family, or even your doctor that you should brace yourself for the possibility that you'll need to get rid of the cat. These suggestions are largely based on myths we cling to about safety when it comes to cats and kids. Let's start with busting some of those myths. Myth 1. The cat will suffocate the baby. People still believe the myth that cats will somehow steal a baby's breath, either because they are jealous of the baby or because they are attracted to a baby's milk breath. Backstory. This myth most likely originated from an incident in the 1790s where an infant's death was attributed to a cat. The report stated, "It appeared on the coroner's inquest that the child died in consequence of a cat sucking its breath, thereby occasioning a strangulation." Truth. Sadly, the infant may have suffered from something more common, such as sudden infant death syndrome or an asthma attack, not from a cat stealing his breath. Did you know? As mentioned in Section 1, these irrational allegations were not uncommon for those times. Since cats were associated with witches back then, they were unjustly blamed for a lot of bad that happened. Myth 2. The cat will give the baby allergies. Expecting parents wonder, is my child going to be allergic to cats because of exposure to them when they are infants? Truth. While some newborns could turn out to be allergic, research suggests that growing up with pets may actually help children avoid allergies. But for those children who wind up with a legitimate cat allergy, there are a number of ways to manage the issue, from air filtration to allergy shots and many stops in between. Since this landscape is quickly changing, for the better, due diligence is your best friend. Did you know? One study showed that exposure to multiple pets, cats or dogs, during the first year of a child's life could reduce the risk of responses to multiple allergens at the age of 6 or 7. A study of children who lived in urban areas, where they are at a higher risk of respiratory disease, found that exposure to cat dander before 1 year of age was associated with fewer allergies when the children were reassessed at 3 years of age. Myth 3. My cat will give me, or the baby, toxoplasmosis. Due to the connection between toxoplasmosis and cats, and the misinformation about how the disease may be transmitted, many concerned parents feel it's too risky to have a cat in the home with a pregnant mother or an infant. Backstory. Toxoplasmosis and the danger it presents to fetuses has always seemed to cause waves of panic in expectant couples. A few years ago, this panic hit a fever pitch when a scientist claimed he had evidence of links between toxoplasmosis